of the Night Shift this morning. We're going to talk about one of the most influential guitarists of all time, the founder of probably the most influential and successful rock bands of all time, Jimmy Page, and the brains, the genius, the musical mind behind Led Zeppelin. He remains an enigma to this day. In this distinctive and comprehensive biography of his life, Chris Salovich has drawn on his own interviews with Jimmy Page and those closest around him to try and unravel a bit about the man behind the mystery that is Jimmy Page and Led Zeppelin. Jimmy Salovich joins me on the line from England right now. A very good morning to you and welcome to the Triple M Network around Australia.
Good morning, Luke. Lovely to be here.
Lovely to be with you too. He is an enigma, is Jimmy Page. Where do you start? A man of mystery, an unbelievable musical genius, and yet a man who dabbles with the occult, obsessed with a man called Aleister Crowley, and so much more. Where do indeed you start?
Well, I started, as is often the best way with biographies, I started with his childhood, and because you learn a lot about people from that. And of course, one of the significant things about Jimmy is that at the age of 13, he appears on a TV show in England with his skiffle group. And that's kind of, you know, in those days, no one had been on TV. This was kind of fairly revolutionary. But he is on television. And that, you think, that must have given him, you know, a spur. He realizes, you know, greatness isn't so far away. You know, there is a bridgeable gap. Also, his headmaster at his secondary school had played football for Manchester United. So he must also have seen that kind of showed, again, there was a possibility there. It wasn't all far distant and impossible to attain.
Take us, if you can, from the transition from the Yardbirds to Led Zeppelin. It was a fascinating time, wasn't it?
Well, it was a fascinating time, but he wouldn't have been in the Yardbirds if it hadn't been for his incredibly prolific career as a session player. For which, by the way, he was earning sort of three times his standard rate. But it was doing that, playing with everyone from kind of, you know, Val Dunican to Van Morrison, Lulu. You know, he plays on Goldfinger, the theme for the third James Bond movie. That taught him, you know, the essence of production. That taught him how to make records. But when he comes to join the Yardbirds, which was kind of a fluke. This is kind of May, June 1966. He's gone with his old friend Jeff Beck. And it's significant, by the way, that, you know, the three greatest English guitarists, which is Jeff Beck, Jimmy Page, and Eric Clapton, they all grew up within about 10 miles of each other.
A friend of mine
pointed out that because it's so boring in those areas, there's nothing to do but play the guitar.
But what an unbelievable era. What an unbelievable era to think you've got Jeff Beck, Eric Clapton, and Jimmy Page living within a few kilometres of each other, but all arriving on the musical scene at the same time. It's not right.
Exactly. So Jimmy goes with Jeff Beck to the Yardbirds are playing a show at Oxford University, and one of those May balls, very posh. And essentially, Keith Relf, the singer, gets completely out of it and falls back into the drum kick. Paul Samuel Smith, the bass player, so appalled that he resigned straight after the gig. Jimmy Page has watched this and thought this is kind of an early example of punk rock, which is fantastic. So he comes in and he takes over on the bass, even though according to Jeff Beck he was completely useless on the bass, which he'd never really played before. But of course, a significant moment of them playing together. There's only one filmed recording, which is in Antonioni's film Blow Up, which was shot that summer. And there's a recreation of them playing at the Ricky Tick Club in Windsor. It's not the Ricky Tick Club, it's a set, in which, you know, Beck smashes his guitar and Page is just standing to the side of him playing, looking fantastic, you know, with his sort of these mutton chop sideburns, hair parted down the middle, looking a bit like Dave Davis in the Kinks, actually. But that's a sort of seminal moment, can be found on YouTube.
I'm talking with the biographer of Jimmy Page. It's called The Definitive Biography. His name is Chris Sailowich. And we are talking about an enigma, that is Jimmy Page. With a purple umbrella and a 50-cent hat.
Steve Marriott was in the Small Faces. They were managed by the notoriously heavy Don Arden, yeah, who suggested to Jimmy Page that if he made any further inquiries like this, he would be playing guitars, his guitar with broken fingers. So anyway, the genesis of what he thinks can happen, a really heavy rock group, starts then. Then he plays with the Yardbirds. It's kind of falling apart. And they do a last tour of Americas of April, May 1968. By this time, he and Peter Grant has emerged by then, his manager. Peter Grant had been working for Mickey Most, the record producer and former South African pop star himself, but very successful record producer with acts like Donovan, Herman's Hermits, for example. And Jimmy Page plays on all those records. Peter Grant takes over as manager, and famously, on one occasion on that tour, there's a couple of mafia promoters who say they're not going to pay them, you know, the money, and they kind of threaten that they will kill them, and Peter Grant just walks up to them with his enormous man mounted Peter Grant. He walks up to them with his enormous weight and his stomach and pushes into them and says, "Whoa, you're going to kill me for $1,000? I don't think so. Pay up." So that was Peter Grant's manner, which obviously impressed Jimmy Page. Because the previous managers had not really been, he felt they were not up to crack, basically. The Yardbirds, there's still some gigs left to be played, and they're going to be played by the new Yardbirds. And the first person that Jimmy Page has wanted, of course, is a singer. And he wanted Terry Reid at first, who was kind of like, you know, is a kind of white soul singer, played with Peter Jay and the Jaywalkers. But he's kind of getting some credibility, and is actually booked to do the support act on Cream's final tour. So he can't do it. So they go and see this guy, Robert Plant, with this terrible group called Obstweedle. I mean, it's a terrible name. But it's also a reflection of kind of Plant's Tolkien-esque fantasies. He's never stopped reading Lord of the Rings. And they're knocked out by Robert Plant. And at first he can't understand. Why is it got some? He's only 19, Plant, by the way. They think, has he got some terrible personality problem? You know, because why has he not been signed up? In fact, he'd already had a couple of singles out on CBS that had flopped. So they get Plant, and Plant brings in. Page says he needs a drummer. Plant brings in his close mate, John Bonham. They go and see him play in London, and already Bonham has something of a reputation. He's a sensational drummer. I mean, because he has both an understanding of, like, he knows how to hit things really hard, but also he's like Plant. He's a kind of old mod and had been into Tamla Motown and soul music, so he understands those rhythms as well. And of course, finally, is brought in John Paul Jones, the session player who had played on Beck's Bolero, and they have. This is the kind of 50th anniversary right now of Led Zeppelin, because their first rehearsal, and there's some debate as to which date, is either the 12th of August or the 19th of August. And it's in a basement in Gerrard Street, London, Chinatown. And afterwards, they have baked beans on toast, and Jimmy showing an indication of what was to come, charges them all a few pence for their baked beans on toast.
Talking with Chris Sailowich, the biographer of the great Jimmy Page. Jimmy Page, The Definitive Biography, tomorrow part 3, and how Stairway to Heaven came to be. Right now, this is Rock and Roll on Triple M.
Let me get back.
stories about Jimmy Page's obsession with the occult. Is that all true, or was that just a side story to make him even more intriguing?
Well, it's an interesting question, which is, of course, why you're asking it. I think he would claim now that Peter Grant played up his interests. Yeah. But I think that's a little disingenuous. Because he was into Crowley from the age of 15.
That is Aleister Crowley, who has been described throughout history as possibly the most evil man to ever live, correct?
Well, yeah, if you're writing for the Daily Express.
Yeah,
yes,
okay.
Exactly. But others might have a different view of him. I mean, Crowley's very interesting because he to fall into disrepute, he died in 1948 from complications resulting from his heroin habit, which you might have thought that Jimmy Page would take some lesson from, but, I mean, clearly he didn't. He'd fallen into disrepute, but by the 60s, he'd come back into, he was slightly revered. I mean, he's on the cover. He's one of the figures on the cover of the Beatles' Sgt. Pepper album, for example.
Yeah. What are those satanic-type symbols that they all have under their names and on the drum kit? What's the significance of all of that?
The runes.
Zozo.
John Bonham's, yeah. Zozo. That's the one that Jimmy Page is known by. And, of course, actually, this is a variant on an art form that Austin Osman Spare had, where he had this character, Zoz. So it's only one letter away from that. So I think there is some inspiration there. But they're kind of variants on Nordic runes, although Jimmy Page certainly was designed for himself. And Robert Plant, which is like a Native American Indian feather, was also, he designed his himself. But I think these are kind of, and they use those very cleverly for, when the record comes out, they have full-page advertisements in the music press with just those runes on. There's no other copy whatsoever.
That's right, and you recognise it straight away. And it certainly added to the mystique that was Led Zeppelin.
Hey, mama said the way you move gonna make you sweat, gonna make you groove.
We are talking with Chris Salowich, the biographer of Jimmy Page. Jimmy Page, the definitive biography. Jimmy Page was known as the king of the riff. He was, wasn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. To me, he is the greatest English rock star. When you kind of exclude the Beatles and the Rolling Stones. There's something so archetypal about those early images of Jimmy Page. Those early pictures, there's one of them sitting around a Jaguar 3.8, the bank robber's car, swanned over. But his Page is kind of at the back of them always, that crimped hair. Hadn't seen anything like it. Always looks kind of gorgeous. They made sure, the Led Zeppelin made sure they look, especially him and Plant, they always look fantastic. But there's something absolutely unique and absolutely archetypal about Jimmy Page's stance as the greatest rock guitarist of all time, the greatest rock star, I would say.
Look, I agree. The accusations of plagiarism that thankfully fell through surrounding Stairway to Heaven, that would have, if you'll pardon the pun, rocked him.
Yes, it certainly would. And I mean, it all seems, I don't know what to make of it. That would have occupied a lot of his time and it would have caused him a lot of distress, I'm absolutely sure.
The Stairway to Heaven song in itself is just Led Zeppelin. If you're not a Led Zeppelin fan, you'll love Stairway to Heaven. And for such a long song, it broke all the rules for radio airplay, particularly in the United States, didn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's the most played a song ever on FM radio, and it's also very unconventional because it speeds up at points where you're not supposed to speed up in a conventional rock song. It's, as you say, it's very, very long. There's someone I knew basically who was in Portobello Road in, I think it's 1971 when they were doing it, and he was a kind of had nefarious activities at that time, and so he's walking along Portobello Road in Notting Hill, and this white Rolls Royce pulls up next to him. Obviously, they realise he's the type of character they need. And in the back is Page and Plant. And they open the window and they say to him, do you know where we can get some hash? And he says, yes, I do, actually, because that's his dentist occupation. So he provides them. We take them to the studio, to Basing Street, Island Records, Basing Street Studio, where they're recording. And they'll hang out for a bit. And Jimmy Page says to Rob Clark, do you want to try out that song that we've been working with? And he starts as a lady who's told they were actually there when it's being recorded.
It is an unbelievable story. There's so much to this. Jimmy Page, the definitive biography, arguably one of the world's greatest rock guitarists, if not the greatest rock guitarist. He took things to different heights. He did things that people hadn't seen before. For example, that guitar solo in Dazed and Confused with the violin bow. You either love it or you hate it. There's no in-between. There is absolutely no in-between. And I am so envious that you know these people, Chris Salowich. The book is called Jimmy Page, The Definitive Biography. And thank you so much for sharing some of your memories with us this morning around Australia on Triple M.
Thank you so much, Luke. I'm honoured. Thanks so much, man.
Stand long, and the forests will echo. too.